This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The Dr. Courtney Show is brought to you by Heroes for Healthy Pets. We're passionate about your pet's health.
Yes, you know that intro music always gets me going. I absolutely love it. Hello and good day from California. Welcome to the Dr. Courtney Podcast. As you can probably guess, my name is Dr. Courtney. I'm a veterinarian, former co-host of Pet Talk on Nat Geo Wild, and just all-around pet lover. I want to send a big thank you to all of you who are regular listeners, and for those of you who are tuning in for the very first time, a big welcome. This is a podcast where we get to laugh, love, and learn all about pets. My favorite season is spring. I mean, honestly, it's a proven fact that spring is the best season. I'm kidding, of course, it's not proven fact, but I love it because it's warm, but not too warm. Everything is blooming. People are celebrating because they survived the winter without getting diagnosed with frostbite. I mean, there's just a lot to celebrate. I've spent the better part of my life in school, so even though the school calendar doesn't necessarily apply to me now, I love spring because it reminds me that school is getting out soon. But there's one thing I kind of dislike about spring, and it's the sunlight. Well, okay, it's not exactly the sunlight that I don't like, but it's the fact that sunlight makes you realize how dirty your house is. Yes, it's the spring cleaning that makes me feel like sometimes moving to another house. Maybe that's because when I was growing up, spring cleaning was very important. It was our time as kids to kind of curse the sun and the very idea of chores. Well, come to find out, spring cleaning actually has a real history. The tradition of spring cleaning originates from a time when people spent months holed up in their homes using fires to keep themselves warm. But when the sunlight of spring finally beamed through the windows, it revealed all the soot and dust that had accumulated over the winter. Essentially, that's where spring cleaning comes from. So it's very obvious that an unclean home, whether it's a mansion, condominium, apartment, or even a vacation home, they all get dirty. But what about individual items? What about the items that we're actually using to clean our home? Are they clean? A recent study was published on the evil sponge. No disrespect to any sponges listening right now, but sometimes they can be a little evil. I mean, that study showed that sponges regularly cleaned in soapy water or the microwave actually harbored more of a special type of bacteria called Moraxella oscillensis. This bacteria is commonly found, and it can cause infections in people with compromised immune systems. So what did that study actually suggest? Throw away your sponge when it gets stinky, and running your sponge through the microwave or dishwasher are the two best ways to disinfect your sponge. But be careful. If the sponge doesn't get hot enough, the bacteria may actually grow. And if the sponge gets too hot, it may actually cause a fire. Also, don't feed your sponges a healthy diet of bacteria, meaning don't use your sponge to kind of clean off chunks of food and wipe up meat juices or even dried saliva from your pet. And there it is. That last recommendation, the one about cleaning dried saliva from your pet, that's the one that resonates with the Dr. Courtney podcast because we love the human-animal bond here, and part of that bond is cleaning and hygiene of us and our pets. So I have to identify and sort of tackle one of the most common questions that I get in the media as a veterinarian: can my dog make me sick? That is a topic that so many pet parents and soon-to-be pet parents are dying to know. I mean, why do people ask that question so often? Well, when one of your family members is a different species, you're going to have some questions about them. And we, just like our pets, love that attention and affection. So it's natural to ask, is that good morning kiss my dog gives me in the face so innocent? Should I be worried? So today we're going to be talking about all of those things. We're going to be talking about a smarter way to clean. We're going to be talking about hygiene in our pets. We're going to be talking about whether or not our pets could make us sick. And there is no one that I'd rather talk to about these topics than my two next guests. They have both been on the front lines of hygiene and the fight against evil microbes that are the source of infections. So right now, let's pause for a few brief moments for a word from a true hero on behalf of pets everywhere. And then let's reconnect on the flip side so we can tackle this subject head on without getting dirty in the process.
Sit. Stay. We'll be right back after a short pause. Well, four to be exact.
Saludos, I'm Dr. Marta Sanchez Emden, owner of Animal Health and Rehab Center and Galloway Animal Hospital, both located in sunny Miami. We successfully rehabilitate disabled patients so they can go on with a good quality of life. We are pioneers in the field of animal rehabilitation and sports medicine in the area of South Florida. We're very proud to be Heroes for Healthy Pets. To learn more about us, visit animalhealthrehab.com. Gracias.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
We are back, and I'm super excited to speak with our next two guests. Have you ever wondered if your pet can make you sick? Are you a secret germaphobe or just a regular person that wants to learn how to clean more effectively? Then I'm happy to be joined by our two next guests. Today, we are going to be speaking with Dr. Sarah Bell West and Dr. Richard Lowe. Both are PhDs. They have been more or less frenemies of microbes their entire professional career. Dr. Sarah Bell West is a scientist and healthcare product manager for Clorox Healthcare. Whether you're at home or you're at work or in a hospital, if you spray something on your countertops to clean, I want you to think of Dr. West. She is the technical specialist behind all of those disinfectant solutions we are using to clean. Dr. West has a doctorate in chemistry from the University of California, Berkeley, active member of the Association of the Healthcare Environment and Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology. She's a prolific writer and writes articles for infectious control periodicals and educates doctors, veterinarians, and dentists and other healthcare professionals on disinfection and ways to improve cleaning in the healthcare arena. And Dr. Lowe, equally as amazing, has both a master's in public health from the University of California, Berkeley, and a PhD in chemistry from the University of Manchester in the UK. Dr. Lowe knows all the ins and outs about cleaning solutions that you might use to clean your house or a hospital. Most people don't think a lot about what they're using to clean their counters, and that's in big part to the amazing scientists like Dr. Lowe and Dr. West. Podcast listeners, podcast family, please join me in welcoming to the show Dr. Sarah Bell West and Dr. Richard Lowe, both PhDs. Welcome, Dr. Sarah and Dr. Lowe.
Thank you so much, Dr. Courtney. We're so excited to be here, and thank you so much for letting us talk about our favorite topic, cleaning and disinfection.
No problem. It's wonderful to have both of you. Sorry to cut you off. I'm naturally differential and sort of deferential to you. I want to call you Dr. West and Dr. Lowe. Can I call you Sarah and Richard?
Yeah, that would be perfect.
Yep, no problem.
Perfect. Thank you. So we do something on this show called Set the Scene. And what that means, what we do when we set the scene, is basically if you can talk a little bit about kind of where you grew up, both of you, and if in your childhood you had any contact at all with pets and how you developed love for animals. You may have only been introduced as an adult or maybe as a child. Could you set the scene both for both of you?
Yeah, sure. So for me, we had pets throughout our childhood, and my favorite pet was our dog named Maisie. She was a mixed breed that we adopted and rescued from our local animal shelter. And Maisie lived with our family for 14 years and was always happy and excited to greet us whenever we walked in the door. Even whenever I was in college, she was always the first one who would come and greet me.
Wow, Maisie. I love that. I absolutely love that. And how about you, Richard?
So I have a slightly different experience of pets in childhood. I'm actually the son of a vet, and I grew up in Hong Kong. But because we lived in a small apartment, we never actually owned a pet. I think my dad had pets or cats before I was born, but I never experienced pets growing up. When I was about 8 or 9, we moved to a pretty rural area in England. And my dad would, on walks around the neighborhood, would find stray mountain sheep that had just sort of wandered through fences, or lambs typically. And so we actually ended up keeping lambs in our back garden and raising sheep. So we had, I think, about 5 sheep over the course of about 6 years at different times. So my experience is growing up with sheep in the back garden.
Unbelievable. Son of a vet with sheep as pets. This is absolutely incredible. I love it. Listen, I want to jump right into it. One of the most common questions I get in the media is, can I get sick from my dog? And it makes sense. I get why people ask this. Let's try and clear this up. What infections can humans get from pets, and what exactly are the risks?
Sure, I'll take that one. It's an important question and one that all pet owners need to consider. And there are a lot of pet owners in the United States. 44 million households have dogs and 36 million households have cats. So yes, while we all love our pets, they can also carry harmful germs, which can in certain situations be transmitted to us and make us sick. That said, the risks of getting an infection from your pet are generally low, but the risk does vary amongst the population. In generally healthy people who are ages between 5 and 65, the risk is low, but that level of risk increases in children under 5, adults over 65, pregnant women, and people with compromised or weakened immune systems. Amongst these people, infections from pets can be serious. So if you have people in your household within these groups, you want to make sure you're practicing good environmental as well as personal hygiene.
That is incredible. I like to hear that the risk is low. I mean, particularly if you're healthy and your pet is healthy. You know, listen, the truth is, I like that idea. It sounds very optimistic, the fact that the risk is low, but infections do occur and it's important to talk about it so we know how to avoid it. Are there any situations where pets were the source of human infection?
Yeah, so I'll give your listeners a couple of examples fairly recently in the last sort of 10 years. And one is actually very recent, and that was in 2017, and it concerned a bacterium called Campylobacter jejuni. So this is a really common bacterium. It's actually the number one cause of foodborne illnesses in humans in the U.S. The CDC, that's the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, that's the U.S. agency responsible for keeping people healthy. They estimate that around 1.3 million people each year get a Campylobacter infection. So it's really common. So
wow.
The majority of those don't actually come from specific outbreaks. But in 2017, the CDC actually traced an outbreak that affected about 110 people in 17 states. And by looking back at the patterns of who got sick and who got infected, they were able to trace the likely source to puppies from a chain of pet stores. And what was actually really concerning about this outbreak is the bacterium that was isolated was resistant to most of the common antibiotics that are used to treat those types of infections. So that's one example. And the second one, a little more interesting, this concerns the bacterium Salmonella typhimurium. So Salmonella is a very common bacterium. Again, it's a foodborne bacterium. But in about 2009 to 2011, 241 people in 42 states became infected with a particular strain of Salmonella. And this was actually a pretty hard one to crack. The people who got sick were between 1 and 76 year old, and 30% of them required hospitalization, but thankfully there were no deaths associated with those. Eventually, after a long investigation, the CDC again were able to trace the source of the infections to African dwarf frogs that people had kept as pets. And it's commonly known that these reptiles and amphibians can carry infections such as Salmonella. And the likely spread was people who had either touched and handled these frogs and then touched their mouths, or the frog had been on a surface in their house and maybe they came along later on, didn't clean the surface, touched it and put their hands to their mouth. So a pretty significant number of people affected by that bacterium and that outbreak.
Incredible. I mean, listen, one case it's sick puppies with Campylobacter, as we say, camp, and then the other amphibians and Salmonella. And, you know, that name Salmonella is pretty notorious. I think one common thread among all of those infections is that it's so important to, you know, wash your hands. It's really important. But I think about Campylobacter, I think about Salmonella, and I say, okay, definitely even the most casual germaphobe has heard about these. Are there any other microbes that may cause illness that we should actually be concerned about besides camp and Salmonella?
Yeah, there are a few more that occur in humans and may be spread from pets to humans. So one of those is Clostridium difficile. That's actually a major problem in healthcare at the moment. That can cause serious and life-threatening infections in humans, especially in the elderly and those who are already sick. Salmonella, we've talked about, also occurs in poultry and rodents. The other one that you may be familiar with is methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, or MRSA, as it's more commonly known. That can cause skin infections. And the last one is one that I think is reasonably common, or not so common, but more occurs more in cats, is Toxoplasma gondii. And that's actually an infectious parasite that can cause flu-like symptoms, eye infections, and a loss of vision.
Okay, wow. Well, obviously, when you hear about any infectious organism that can cause you to go blind, I mean, it should make everyone stand and pay attention. I think the true intersection of the human-animal bond is, okay, we don't want our pets to make us sick. We don't want to make our pets sick. But what about from pet to pet? Is there situations that come to mind for you that say, what about infectious diseases that can be spread between pets?
Yeah, and I think the most common one that I'm sure you're well aware of, and many of your listeners are probably aware of, is canine influenza. And this country's just been through a pretty big outbreak of canine influenza that started in 2016 in shelter cats in Indiana, which was then transmitted by some mechanism of dogs and cats interacting, eventually jumped into dogs. That spread quickly, and by 2017 in May, that had been identified in dogs in over a dozen states. And actually, most recently in California and Nevada, we've had canine influenza this winter and spring that sickened almost 650 dogs, about 70% of them in California. And when I first found out about it, the next day I scheduled a visit for my pet to go and get his influenza shots.
Oh, what a great idea. Obviously, prevention is always better than cure, and you don't want to wait until your dog ends up with influenza to start treating it. You certainly want to protect them with a vaccine. Certainly, you're right. We have been covering this canine influenza outbreak, and you know the challenge with that particular virus is getting the knowledge out there and educating the public on the fact that this does spread like wildfire. You know, the challenge with all of these microbes that we're talking about, and this is probably the most obvious and distinguishable characteristic about them, they're invisible. You can't see them with the naked eye. And that's one of the biggest challenges. So when I think about basically microbes that can make you sick that you can't see, I think it's so important to keep items clean and keep the environment clean. In your mind, why do pet owners need to keep the environment clean?
Sure. So, you know, as you just mentioned, you know, germs are invisible, but whenever I think about where a germ can go, think about anywhere a pet or a person can go and any surface that we or our pets can touch. And if you think about it, that's almost anywhere. And, you know, whenever we talk about how germs can spread from pets to people, what we want to do is we want to think not only about what they're touching, but also their bodily fluids. So, you know, whenever a pet is sick, they'll commonly shed a germ that's making them sick. This could be a bacteria or a virus. They'll shed that in their body fluids. That could be feces, urine, or vomit. Feces, or, you know, puppy poop, as we like to call it, is, you know, the most common way that gastrointestinal pathogens are spread. And in some cases, that pathogen that is making the dog sick might still be shed in the dog poop even after the animal appears healthy. These pathogens can contaminate surfaces, and the scary part is that they can survive for hours, days, weeks, or even months. For example, as Richard mentioned with Campylobacter, that pathogen responsible for the Petland puppies outbreak, it can survive on a moist surface for about 4 hours. But flip side, Salmonella, which is responsible for these foodborne illnesses, that can survive on surfaces for 10 days. And there are even studies showing that it can survive on surfaces for up to 4 years, which is really scary.
4 years.
And studies have shown that pathogens can be transferred from hard surfaces, which would include your countertops or your floors, and soft surfaces such as carpets and bedding, to our hands. And then we can then spread them to our nose and our mouth, and that can potentially cause an infection. And while you don't think that you touch your face that much, we actually looked into this, and studies have shown that people touch their face a lot, around 100 to 300 times per hour. And as I'm thinking about this, I'm actually touching my face. So there's one right there. There's a lot of opportunities for us to transfer infectious pathogens from your hands to your nose or your mouth. And then from there, they can move into your lungs and your stomach and cause an infection.
It's absolutely incredible just how many times that we unconsciously touch our face, our eyes, our nose, our ears. I completely agree with you. I mean, it's something that we all do reflexively. And let's be honest, we are constantly touching our mobile devices and phones. And that can obviously be a source of spreading a bacteria as well as a fomite. I think what a lot of pet parents are wondering is, how can pet owners reduce the risk of germs spreading to them from their pet? I mean, they want to stay safe too.
Yeah, that's a great question. And one of the first things you can do as a pet owner is practice good hand hygiene. And actually, regardless of whether you're a pet owner or not, you should always practice good hand hygiene. It just helps to keep you healthy. So they're key to spreading harmful germs from pets to people. And soap and water and thoroughly washing is the best way. If that's not available, you can also use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. These are very common. They're very widely available. And if you have young children in the house, they should always be supervised by adults when washing their hands. And there really is a correct method to wash hands. And you can look this up online. It's pretty easy to find methods, hand hygiene methods, you know, where you're rubbing your palms to palms, you're rubbing the backs of your palms, you're interlacing fingers and rubbing, you're cleaning with your thumbs, and you're really scrubbing into the palms. It should take about 15 to 30 seconds to thoroughly wash your hands.
That's incredible. A lot of people don't realize, and this is going to sound weird, but just how long 30 seconds is. They have this perception that it's a lot shorter of time. So certainly if you could sing half of a song lyric in your head, that probably is enough time to past that 30 seconds. When you're thinking about the times in which you should be washing your hands, there are some moments where it's extremely obvious where, you know, you're using the restroom. But then there are times where it's not so obvious, where maybe people need to be a little bit more conscious about it. In your opinion, what are some key moments where hand hygiene is absolutely essential?
Yeah, so if you have just walked your dog and you've picked up pet waste or the pet waste is in the yard, even if you've used a bag, always wash your hands. It's the first thing I do when I walk in the house. Before the dog gets a cookie, it's the first thing I do as I go to the sink and I give my hands a good wash. That's one time. After cleaning out a cat litter box, we'll talk more about cleaning cat litter boxes later on, but that's a very important time to do that. You know, even if you've used gloves, you should still clean your hands, wash your hands. If your pet has had an accident in the house, if you've had to clean up after vomit or they've urinated on the carpet or the floor, you should wash your hands then. Before eating and drinking or preparing food, if you are playing with your pet and you then go to make something in the kitchen, give your hands a good wash. And lastly, I think this is also a good one, especially in the winter. If you've been for a walk with a dog and he's wet and you have an old towel and you wipe the dog down with, you probably don't wash that towel very often. I think I leave mine for a couple of weeks probably. But you should wash your hands after you've done that, because whatever's on that dog, on the paws, on the now transfers to the towel, can easily transfer to your hands. So those are some of the moments.
Listen, anytime you're cleaning up any eliminations, it completely makes sense. And that's excellent advice about hand hygiene. We'd also love to hear some excellent tips about cleaning your home. But we have to take a quick break. Would you mind both of you just staying with me just for a few moments when we come back so we can talk more about the home?
Cool.
Excellent. Thanks so much. We will be right back.
Sit. Stay. We'll be right back. Right after we kibble a little with our sponsors.
It's not just a sneeze. It could be the pathway to disease. Your dog is at risk for contracting dog flu. That's why it's important to vaccinate your dog for dog flu. Get your dog vaccinated today. Visit dogflu.com for more information.
Pet Life Radio, the number one pet radio network on the planet, joins forces with iHeartRadio to put the power of your pets in your pocket.
Awesome.
Download the iHeartRadio app and rock Pet Life Radio on your phone, on your tablet, on your Xbox, in your car. Pet talk, pet tunes, and fun pet times. Pet Life Radio and iHeartRadio. Positively possum.
And we are back. We're having a scintillating conversation about a smarter way to clean and also about hygiene and that intersectionality between pet parents and pets, particularly when it comes to hygiene. We're talking to two really luminaries, scientific luminaries in their field, Dr. Sarah Bell West, Dr. Richard Lowe, both PhDs, and have been on the front lines of fighting infectious disease for a very long time through excellent knowledge of disinfection and sanitation processes. We are right at the critical stage where we're talking about something that a lot of pet parents would love to know about: cleaning your home, how to maintain a very sanitary and hygienic environment in your home. Do either of you have any tips for cleaning your home or cleaning up after your pet?
Yeah, so let's start with cleaning your home. And there are three stages to actually cleaning and disinfecting. It sounds like it's all one thing, but there's actually three stages. First, you need to remove any loose organic material. Then you need to remove dirt that might be ingrained or sort of grained on. And then you actually have to disinfect. So first thing you do is remove that loose organic material. So you'll need to vacuum or sweep. So if you've got a pet that sheds hair, you'll be vacuuming or sweeping regularly to remove hair and pet dander and any other loose organic material. My brother has a Bernese Mountain dog. He vacuums every day. I have a non-shedding dog. I don't need to vacuum every day, which is great.
Yes.
But that's the first stage. If you suffer from allergies, this is actually really important to do. If you're vacuuming, it can help to use a vacuum that has a HEPA filter. So HEPA stands for high efficiency particulate air. And these filters capture 99.7% of allergens that are as small as 0.3 of a micron. That's less than 1,000th of a millimeter. But even though that's a small filter, that's not going to capture bacteria and viruses, which are smaller than that. And that's why it's essential to move on and clean and disinfect.
And once you've vacuumed, you're ready to clean. What's important to know here is that the efficacy of some disinfectants, such as bleach, can be reduced by the presence of organic material, which we call soil. A disinfectant is going to kill bacteria and viruses by reacting with the organic materials that make up that organism. If there's too much soil on the surface, the disinfectant can actually get depleted before it has a chance to come in contact with the pathogen and kill it. So it's important to remove visible dirt and soil using a detergent-based cleaner. This is particularly important after you've cleaned up a pet accident. You want to make sure that you've removed all of the visible organic material, which would include vomit, feces, or urine first before you disinfect. Now let's talk about disinfection. When we say disinfection, we're talking about killing the microorganisms that are present on a surface. First, you're going to need to select a disinfectant that is EPA registered to kill specific germs and pathogens. The label should have an EPA registration number somewhere on it, so you want to check for that. Usually to find this information, you want to flip the bottle over and look near the back of the label in the back corner near the UPC code. You'll see it'll say EPA registration number followed by a series of numbers. What that means is that that product has passed a series of tests and that data has been approved by the Environmental Protection Agency, demonstrating that that product is effectively able to kill certain pathogens. Second, it's really important to follow the directions for use on the disinfectant label. I know we're all busy and I know the print is sometimes small on the label, but you know, take a time, especially if you're trying a new product, to read those directions for use. An important point to note here is that all disinfectants are going to have what we call a contact time. And what that contact time means is that's the amount of time that the disinfectant needs to stay wet on the surface in order to kill the germs that it's approved to kill. You'll notice that contact times can range anywhere from 30 seconds to 10 minutes. So really, whenever you're looking for products, try to find products that have a fast contact time, because we all know in a busy world, surfaces dry quickly and we want to move on. We want to clean, disinfect, and move on. Third, you want to apply the disinfectant following those directions for use. And as I mentioned before, make sure that those disinfectant surfaces stay visibly wet for the full contact time. Based on the label directions, what you want to do is after disinfecting, you can either leave that surface to dry, or if that surface is going to be contacted by your pet, or maybe you're wiping off a kitchen counter or another surface that people might be eating off of, what you want to do is you want to rinse the surface or wipe off that extra disinfectant.
Wow, this is really incredible. A lot of people just don't understand, or they do understand, but just haven't really thought about it in the way that you presented it, which is, hey, it's two separate processes. You've got to clean first, remove all that organic material, and then you have to disinfect. And then when it comes to disinfectant, if you drill down a little bit deeper, a lot of people aren't aware of that a disinfectant is EPA registered to kill specific germs and pathogens, and it will be listed. And then, of course, you can't just spray it on and wipe it off, because there are some that say, hey, it has to sit there for a while. And keeping that surface wet completely makes sense while you're waiting for it to work its magic and kill those microbes. But a lot of people are thinking, all right, well, that's fine for a countertop. But what about soft surfaces like a carpet?
Yeah, soft surfaces can be tricky. On ColorFest, carpets, rugs, upholstery, and mattresses, what you should do first is you should blot away any excess liquid or solids with a clean, dry, absorbent cloth. So for example, if your dog has had an accident on their pet bed, what you want to do is you really want to make sure that you're absorbing all of the urine first before you start using the stain remover. Then what you want to do is you want to spray a color-safe cleaner or stain remover directly onto the stain or that affected area until it's completely covered. Then, just like we were talking with disinfectants, you need to let that stain remover sit on the surface for a specific period of time, and the label, again, is going to tell you how to do that. Typically, for these stain and odor and treatment removers, usually what you'll see is the contact time is between 3 to 10 minutes. After that, you want to wipe the area with a clean, damp cloth, and then you want to keep that treated area clear of people and pets while it dries. There are a couple of points to remember using any product, and I think one thing to note is that, you know, sometimes we go to the grocery store, we grab wipes, and we aren't paying attention to which wipe we're grabbing. Maybe we're grabbing what's on sale. Every product is going to have slightly different directions for you. So you really want to pay attention to that. And, you know, maybe you haven't used a product in a while, flip it over and read those label instructions. Secondly, if you have a new product, or maybe you got new countertops or a new surface in your house, test that product in an inconspicuous area just to make sure it's not going to damage the surface. This is especially important if you're using one of these cleaners on a soft surface.
Ah, perfect. Now, obviously, you know, when we are with our pets, we're thinking about countertops, we're thinking about carpet, and then we have a whole bunch of other just pet-centric items. I'm talking about food bowls, water bowls, pet toys, leashes, harnesses, collars, all of that fun stuff that helps us go outside and actually enjoy a good time with our pets. I mean, I have friends who literally have a trunk full of toys for their pets. I mean, more toys than their pets even know what to do with, you know? And what's amazing about pets is even if they don't have any toys, they will just simply play tug of war with the leash. So this is the magic about them that I love so much. So I guess when it comes to those sorts of things, you just finished playing a 15-minute session of tug of war with your dog. You're exhausted. They're exhausted. They've got saliva over everything. What are some tips you might have for cleaning food and water bowls and pet toys?
Yeah, so, you know, we wouldn't want to play with slimy toys or eat from dirty dishes, and really your pet shouldn't either. So you should aim to clean those regularly. And it's really easy to do that using common disinfectants and cleaners found in the house. And you'll either want to sanitize or disinfect your pet bowl or toys, depending on where your dog has been. So let's talk about sanitizing. So this is actually a process that reduces microorganisms to a safe level. And the way I think about that is, it's a level of microorganisms that if your dog then licks the bowl, they're not going to get sick from picking up a few microorganisms that are still there. So for bowls and hard plastic toys, clean them first, just like you should clean a surface first to get rid of any dirt or saliva that may still be on them, and then rinse them. In a plastic dish pan, just prepare a simple sanitizing bleach solution. Always read the label of the product you're actually using, because that's going to tell you the correct strength. But typically for bleach, it's around a couple of teaspoons to a gallon, so pretty dilute. Then you're going to add the pre-washed items, let them soak for a few minutes, 2 to 4 minutes, and then rinse them with a clean towel and air dry them. Now, if your dog has actually been sick, or maybe has been exposed to sick dogs, or perhaps has been in the dog park and you don't know whether other dogs have been around playing, if you're playing with a toy in the dog park with another dog, you might want to actually look at disinfecting. And so, again, the same process, clean the bowls with a detergent-based cleaner, rinse them thoroughly, and then in that dish pan, prepare a disinfecting bleach solution. So disinfection kills more organisms than sanitizing does. And so you'll need a slightly stronger bleach product. Again, read the label. That will tell you how much to make. Add the pre-cleaned items, leave them for a few minutes, and then rinse and dry them. And you're done.
That's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. You know, sometimes I'm thinking about and I say to myself, all right, well, these are pretty simple methods. It doesn't take any extra time to do that. If you do it properly the first time, it will generally work. A lot of my friends and myself and a whole bunch of people that I know are simply saying, you know what? I have a busy schedule. All of my pet's laundry gets washed maybe once a week, and I put it on the super hot cycle, and maybe I throw in a little bleach or something like that. But we're doing that out of reflex and kind of what we were taught when we were children. It's semi-simple to clean the pet's bowls and toys, but what about pet bedding?
Yeah, that's really important. And I'm sure as any pet owner knows, bedding begins to smell after a while. So it's really important to launder regularly. Also, I know whenever I play, I'm at my parents' house and I'm playing fetch with their dogs. Their dogs love the soft toys, those little stuffed animals. And, you know, they are slimy and they need to be washed and cleaned and disinfected regularly. So, you know, with bedding or toys, it's really important that if your pet has, you know, recently had an infectious disease or been sick, you really want to make sure you're laundering even more frequently. What we recommend is laundering. First off, purchasing surfaces and bedding that can be laundered. That's really important, especially if it has a launderable cover. And then second, launder those surfaces with hot water and use bleach. Again, you want to follow your manufacturer's instructions. And it's simple to do for most bedding. And again, as you just mentioned, Dr. Courtney, you know, this can be done on a regular washing machine on a regular basis. You know, just build it into your routine. We also recommend, if you can do it, drying using high temperatures. That can also help kill any infectious microorganisms that maybe made it through the washing cycle. That heat can kill them too.
Awesome. Awesome. So hot water, use bleach, and just dry at a high temperature if possible. I like all of those suggestions because it sounds like you're almost hitting the microbes from a variety of ways. You know, you're hitting them from all directions. But listen, at the end of the day, you know, we are constantly bombarded with microbes every single day, every single minute of every single day. We have microbes that live on our skin and we're always coming in contact with them. But people aren't walking around constantly getting sick. And that's because we have, for the most part, an immune system that helps us. And dogs and cats are no different in that respect. So let's give a big salute to the immune system. But the truth is, not everyone has that competent immune system. Not everyone has these sort of all-star athlete inflammatory cells that can knock out bacteria and viruses. So is there an increased risk of infection for some groups of people? And is there anything you'd recommend for these groups of people who don't have an all-star immune system?
Yeah, there are. And that really is another good question. And actually, it's the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that's the CDC, the government agency responsible for public health in the U.S., they actually issue guidelines about keeping pets if you may have an increased risk of infection. So first, if you have children under five in your household, you probably shouldn't have pet reptiles, amphibians, or poultry. Remember that outbreak, there were children as young as one who actually got sick because these amphibians like frogs can be the source of disease that kids can easily catch. Kids don't wash their hands very often. They have poorer hand hygiene because they're kids. Secondly, if you're in a household and someone in the household is pregnant, you probably shouldn't adopt new or stray cats, especially kittens, because there's a risk of getting toxoplasmosis, and that can cause birth defects. But the CDC does suggest that if there is an existing cat, they can actually keep their current cat. Third, pregnant women should avoid changing cat litter. If they have to, they should wear disposable gloves and obviously wash hands immediately after the litter is changed. Ideally, changing the litter daily can reduce the risk of getting toxoplasmosis because the parasite doesn't become infectious until about 1 to 5 days after it's been excreted in a cat's feces. Fourth, people who have weakened immune systems, they should take additional care with personal and environmental hygiene. Wash hands more frequently than they would normally do, and clean and disinfect surfaces that come into contact with pets regularly and very frequently. And lastly, people in high-risk groups, all of those, should wash bites and scratches immediately. Don't allow pets to lick open wounds on their faces. Wear protective gloves when cleaning up after pet accidents. And launder pet bedding at least once a week and potentially more regularly. And so these are guidelines really coming from the CDC, and there really are guidelines worth following.
Yeah, I would definitely agree, particularly because you think about it, the types of microorganisms that would never affect somebody like maybe you and me could be a severe health risk for somebody else. And that's always important to consider. Speaking of health risks, pet parents, at the bottom line, at their very core, the one thing they want to do is keep their pets safe. They don't want to do anything to harm their pet because they want to be good stewards, good healthcare providers to their furry family members. And it completely makes sense. Last thing you would want to do is any harm to your pet whatsoever. So when it comes to cleaning products, that's what a lot of pet parents are concerned with. Is this safe? What I'm about to spray on this countertop, is that safe for my pet? So do you have any tips for selecting products to use around pets?
Yeah, we do. And as I'm sure your listeners know, there are many products that can be used for cleaning and disinfecting. And choosing the right products around to use around your pet can actually be difficult. So we have a few tips. First off, as we've said many times today, always read the product label to determine whether it's appropriate to use around pets. Many products will be safe to use around pets if they're used according to the directions for use. For example, some products may state, keep pets and children away from the area until dry, so you should follow that guidance. Others may say, rinse the surface before food contact or pets are allowed on it. It probably won't say pets, but anytime it says rinse the surface before preparing food, that's probably a good indicator that you shouldn't let a pet lick that surface, for instance, while the disinfectant is still on it. Secondly, look to see if products carry any pet-safe language. Some cleaning products may do, but disinfectants may not. It just depends on the product. Look to see if the product you're using is a one-step cleaner and disinfectant. So we haven't talked about this, but there are products that have detergents and disinfectants in the same product. So if you can use a product that basically has both of those, you only need to use that one product for cleaning and disinfecting. But make sure you still use it to clean off any gross soil or dirt that you may have on the surface. Some products may be labeled for use on food contact surfaces. That means they can be applied to a surface that comes into contact with food and left to dry without a rinse step. Those are great to use around the house with pets because obviously there's no extra rinsing step needed. And lastly, and I think this is just good general advice for all cleaning and disinfecting products, keep them safely and securely stored out of reach of pets. And those are our tips for selecting pet-safe products.
You'd be surprised at how many times I've actually heard about pets where they've actually licked the floor after it has been cleaned and it results in severe irritation inside the mouth and basically a chemical burn. So you're completely right. I love that last tip, particularly even though you think that these products may not be interesting or, for lack of a better term, appetizing to a pet, just keep them out of reach. That's so, so important. You know, I have to thank you from the bottom of my heart because, again, let me repeat, this is one of the biggest topics that I get questions about and people are most curious about is cleanliness, hygiene. And what I love about that is people recognize it's very important, particularly those who are in the pet health industry and businesses and kennels and boarding facilities. They realize just how important hygiene is because if it's not at a highest priority, it may shut down their business. So I just want to thank both of you for joining me during this podcast today. I think it was an absolutely illuminating conversation, and I just want to thank you for your generosity of time. If we do a part two and a part three, which I fully plan on it, would you both mind joining me again?
Yeah, be sure. As I said, we'd be happy to come back, and you know, feel free if people have questions after listening to this podcast, send them in, and those are things that we can address in round two.
Well, fantastic. Is there any social media contact, email, or anything that people can possibly contact you by?
Ooh, that's a good one. So for us, since we are employees of the Clorox company, we kind of have some rules around how we interact with others on social media. Probably the best thing to do is if you are a pet professional or a veterinary professional, you know, you definitely want to connect with us on Twitter using the @Clorox Healthcare tag. And then if you're at home and you're trying to learn more about how to clean and some tips for cleaning and disinfection, you know, you can connect with us on Twitter or other social media forums with our retail company, the Clorox Company.
I love that. I absolutely do. And as a third fail-safe podcast fam, just reach out to me and ask me any questions and I will forward it along to them, okay? So this is wonderful. Thank you again both for joining me. I deeply appreciate it and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Wow, that was incredible. I mean, we covered a lot of ground today. I mean, we got a chance to address one of the biggest questions in the room, which is, can my pets make me sick? We got a chance to talk to Dr. West and Dr. Lowe, both PhDs, about these organisms, Salmonella, Campylobacter, Clostridium. And then we delved into just how important hand hygiene is, which everyone knows it is. But we delved down into it and talked about the certain times where it should be the top priority. And then, of course, the big kahuna, which is cleaning and disinfection and how to separate both of those two. Remove the organic material, the dirt, and then make sure you're using that disinfection the way that it's instructed to do, which is contact time. You got to let it sit there so it can work its magic. And then, of course, we talked about carpets and also bedding too. We definitely covered a lot of ground, but I think the last bullet point we talked about, which is probably the most important one, is how do we make sure we clean but keep our pets safe? Read those labels, make sure it has a lot of pet safe language on there, and make sure you rinse off that disinfection so that you don't have that issue like I had where a patient of mine, a boxer, was licking the floor after it had been cleaned with a disinfection and had a lot of oral ulceration, had a lot of irritation in the mouth. So we covered tons of ground today. I just want to go back and re-listen to all of it. Podcast family, thank you so much for joining me during this episode. There'll be more exciting episodes with more incredible, illustrious guests like Dr. West and Dr. Lowe. And so until next time, we'll get a chance to talk again. And just remember, there's nothing stronger than the human-animal bond.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.